Hello and welcome to Android Developers Backstage. I'm Chet Haas from the Developer Relations team.
I'm Tor Norby from the Android Studio team.
I'm Romain Guy
from...
And so it starts. So I'm Romain Guy from the Android Toolkit team, and now for our guests.
And I'm Gossett from the Android Accessibility team.
I'm Sally from the Android Accessibility team.
Excellent. So that must mean we're talking about accessibility, and the problems that we had starting out must mean this is our second ever completely remote podcast. So welcome everybody as we try once again to try to figure this out. Let's talk about accessibility. So we talked to Phil Weaver on your team, I don't know, 2 or 3 years ago about general state of accessibility. So I'm sort of curious to know where things are at these days, what developers should keep in mind, what tools are happening. Why don't you, let's start with a more general thing. Introduce us to why accessibility is an important thing for developers to actually know about. What should they keep in mind?
Yeah, I think really accessibility is important because it's a large subset of your users that need to be able to use your device. There's this tendency that we have as app developers to become very focused on a particular kind of user, the almost ideal user, because that's where all of the shiny kinds of code that we're building are, right? But the reality is many of your users are going to be interacting with your device, sometimes in subtly and sometimes in dramatically different ways. And if you don't build for them, then your UI is fundamentally broken for them and your application doesn't exist for them.
I think I was introduced to some of the complexities through family members who have had growing accessibility issues in various ways, right? Sight as well as some motor skill issues, and understanding and like problems grow where like they didn't necessarily have some of the issues a couple of years ago, and then they grow, and then all of a sudden they're using some of the facilities that your team provides. As well as some of the stuff that the toolkit team built in, like the text-to-speech capabilities, or you know, use of TalkBack or whatever. Right. So it's also like I've heard Shaylin and Phil talk about this as well, where it's not just about people. It's obviously about people that have disabilities. It's also about all of us through different phases of our life or through different situations that we may be in. Bright light outdoors. On a moving bus where you can't hit a small touch target, where accessibility enters into everybody's lives in very subtle and continuous ways.
Yeah, that's actually pretty much exactly right, right? I think based on your situation and based on how you're able to interact with the device, whether that's because of your own health and your own capabilities or because of the environment, the way you interact with the world, the way you interact with your device fundamentally changes. And things don't turn out to be the way that UX designers typically build UIs. And it's a really ideal, they've got a phone in front of them, they're going to do something with that phone, right? It gets to be quite a bit more complicated because you have to be able to present information to a user in a different way depending on their circumstance and allow the user to act on the device depending on their circumstance, right? Accessibility is just allows the concept of an accessibility service developer to define that in a programmatic way to apply that to your UI without you having to consider all of those different circumstances for all the different kinds of accessibility users, if that makes sense.
It does, but you mentioned a buzz phrase in there, accessibility service. Okay, so we've been talking generally about accessibility. So what do you mean by accessibility service?
Oh, so this is something that's actually kind of specific to the Android accessibility architecture, right? I think there is, if you're thinking about accessibility on Android, there's kind of a three core parts of it. There's your application, which is adding value to the user's life in some form, right? So you might have like a mapping app or a social media app, which allows them to consume content or do something in the world, right? Now, that application is presenting information to the user and it allows the user to act on that application, right? The idea is to take that information and those actions and create a generic representation of them through the accessibility framework. If you're familiar with Android accessibility, that's like accessibility node info, accessibility events, content descriptions, et cetera, right? And present that to a different application called an accessibility service, right? An accessibility service is an application that takes the UI presented to the user and adjusts it for those users' needs. So TalkBack, which is an accessibility service for blind people, is going to take UI that's visually presented and speak it to the user, right? And the idea here is that you as an app developer aren't necessarily going to be an expert in every single kind of accessibility user. That's almost unreasonable to expect of most application and UI developers. But someone out there understands blind people like the TalkBack team does, or understands people with mobility impairments like the Switch Access team does, or someone out there understands how dyslexic individuals may be able to consume UI, and they can adjust your UI with this programmatic representation, which is the accessibility framework.
So there's something interesting about accessibility services, and that's not specific to Android. I've seen that on other operating systems where a lot of apps seems to like being an accessibility service to offer other kinds of services. Like I seem to recall that the early password managers on Android, for instance, were presented as accessibility services because it does give you access, like you said, to a lot of the UI, right? You can read it, you can modify it. So is that something that people should be doing?
No, probably not really. I think one of the things about accessibility is that it gives a particular application with a ton of warnings complete access to the device, right? Effectively, like, you can do anything you want to the device if you're an accessibility service because you can act on behalf of the user, right? And so if you're another application that's trying to do other things, you really have to think hard. Am I really willing to be another surface of attack to be able to get all of the user's information and things like that? It's a much more difficult thing to do, right? You invite yourself to a lot of scrutiny, a lot of issues with security. And on top of that, like, it's something that you need. We throw up a lot of scary dialogues before the user is allowed to turn on an accessibility service. And so you really just end up terrifying your user away from your product.
I think one of the general areas I've seen is like testing frameworks, at least historically, right? Because they want to know what is going on, you know, in the UI. And so I believe the accessibility service area provided them that capability. Is that still the way that these frameworks work, or is that historical? Do we also have sort of testing facilities that get them away from accessibility services?
Oh, it really depends on the type of testing and the type of UI testing you're doing. There are definitely completely reasonable and completely great testing frameworks that do rely upon accessibility, including our own stuff like Automator, UI Automator, and things like that, right? And there's other things that hook in more at the application level. That's a completely reasonable use case, in my opinion.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So that was accessibility service, which is, sorry, Roma, you had something?
I was going to say, I set up recently a new machine at home, and I'm just looking at a list of apps on my desktop that are accessibility services. And I see a video player, the mouse driver, a file manager. It's interesting what accessibility services give you access to. And I understand that you know, developers might be tempted to use those features.
So we were talking about accessibility service, which is really more advanced and niche. Like that's for applications that need to expose capabilities through alternate mechanisms for specific kinds of users or specific kinds of impairments. But there are also general approaches to accessibility that apply to all developers. And I see Tor raising his hand very politely.
Well, I didn't want to interrupt you. I did anyway, I guess. I just wanted to follow up on what you said earlier, where you said that obviously the accessibility notes are describing what your app is doing so that these like TalkBack and all these helpers can then, you know, translate that into something that's more consumable. But did you say that you can also change the presentation? So how does that work? Does it mean that, you know, for example, widgets on Android would somehow be able to change how they paint a button based on something an accessibility info might do?
Yeah, actually, accessibility draws on a window layer that's above all other windows. So in theory, and actually, we actually have a few examples of this. You can draw on top of the application and replace certain aspects of the application with your own UI. And this is relevant. And for example, there's an example accessibility service that I think Phil worked on, where for his son, has a particular difficulty reading text, right? So he was able to effectively overlay the whole UI with a different set of text, which instead, where each character has a different color based on how his son could read it, right? So you can do these sort of things. It's not going to be as responsive in animations as we'd like, but one day.
So I was going to take it out of accessibility service because I think that's like a very deep cavern for some developers to go in for specific reasons. And sort of generalize and talk about accessibility for basically all applications, right? I mean, there's a level of accessibility that all developers need to be aware of for the large number of users out there that are going to need access to their applications, right?
Yeah, exactly. I think the big thing to think about if you're building any sort of UI, and by that I mean if you're specifying any of the information that the user is going to see, and this information comes in two classes. One is information that you use to interact with the application, like a scroll bar, for example, right? And the other is content, right? There should be a way to add that accessibility information in there too. So the first class of information that I'm talking about is typically stuff that you, the app developer or the UI developer, or the framework developer specifies as they're building that widget, right? If you're creating a new way of scrolling, a new way of interacting with the device, any information that's being visually presented to the user, even if it's very subtle, should be presented to the accessibility hierarchy. And typically that means trying to understand accessibility in a little bit more depth, right? Now you can kind of skirt away from having to do this if you avoid making your own widgets and using stuff that's provided in the material components or in other frameworks like Android X. But if you end up writing your own UI, you're stuck in this thing, right? The other aspect of this is content. And it turns out that most content isn't made by app developers. So you have to make sure that at the source of your content, whether that might be like journalists or users posting stuff, they have the easy ability to actually annotate accessibility information. So for example, if you have a mechanism for users to upload images, it should be very clear and obvious how they can add effectively a content description to that particular thing. And that's something that I've noticed a lot around where people have reasonably accessible applications, but their content is not that accessible because they don't really make it easy or obvious how to make their stuff accessible.
Okay. And then something I encountered recently through talking to Shailen and understanding how broken some of my code was for accessibility was the tools that we provide. So there's like the, okay, you need to keep these things in mind, and there are these special attributes you should make sure to populate, especially if you're creating custom components instead of just overwriting the normal ones. If you use button, it's already taken care of essentially, but if you have a custom view, you're going to need to figure out something. But then there are tools to help you understand the parts that you did not handle correctly, right? And they're actually pretty easy to use. TalkBack is that's more difficult because it kind of takes over the entire UI. But can you talk about Switch Access and Accessibility Scanner?
Yeah, so I would say, Accessibility Scanner, Accessibility Scanner is effectively something that you can run on your application and it will indicate effectively basic mistakes that you're going to make, right? Things like a missing content description and the issues like contrast and widget size and things like that. The sort of accessibility scanner and other integrations of accessibility, which I can't remember the name of off the top of my head, they do give you basic, almost automated accessibility coverage where they can find some kind of obvious but basic issues. But to really understand how your application is going to feel in an interaction, you're going to have to pull out something like TalkBack or Switch Access, right? Typically, we recommend people to use TalkBack because that exercises both the presentation of information and the action on your application, right? So any holes in your accessibility experience are going to be very obvious in TalkBack. Switch Access actually captures the action end of the accessibility cycle. And Switch Access, if you don't know, is an accessibility service for people with severe motor disabilities where they can drive your UI through a series of switches, even a single switch. It doesn't have to be that complicated if you're testing it, but it is something that is worth trying out.
Okay. Yeah, I guess there's that distinction between the right use scanner to sort of highlight the things that can be automatically highlighted. In my particular sample case, I was running into contrast issues that weren't obvious to me. And then the other ones are about basically put yourself in the mind of your user to figure out how they're going to use it and what other problems are lurking there.
Well, yeah, exactly. Actually, when I'm actually developing, I think about it a little bit differently as I go, right? Whenever I'm adding in a widget or a bit of UI, I try to think, is all of the information that I have here being presented to the accessibility user, and is the accessibility user able to act on that information, right? And that becomes a very kind of digestible grain of action that I can take every time I'm building through a widget or something like that. Yeah,
so,
what's up?
Yeah, I have a question. So if I'm an application developer and I'd like to know more about accessibility, because, you know, I've heard about it, I know it's important and I do care, but is there good resources out there that will introduce me to this world, let me know what I can prioritize, what are the good practices? You know, for instance, Chet mentioned contrast. Like, I assume like some contrasts are better than others. Like, how do I find out about all of this?
Oh, there's tons of resources. You just have to Google Android accessibility and you can get all of these guidelines online.
I think he just said, let me Google that for you.
That's what I heard. Well, yeah, of course. But I was wondering if there was, you know, if you knew of a resource in particular, like, do we have something on developer.android.com that's a good way to get started? Or do you need to, like, because there's also like the W3C, what is it called? I think they have their own
W3C. Yeah, W3C might give you a little bit more in terms of web accessibility, right? And that is a different topic that has a little bit more depth to it. For just general Android accessibility in terms of guidelines, in terms of what's considered accessible and some of the tools that you can use, you can just Google Android accessibility development. I mean, the top pages there are going to give you tons of information to jump into this that are going to be useful to your particular case.
But one of the things that I encountered last week in finding and then fixing the contrast issues was the material site allows you to play with color palettes. And then there's an accessibility tab that you can access to see how those palettes, whether there are contrast issues. So they have some of the capabilities built directly into that for that specific issue. Obviously, it's not a general solution. I was also curious. So we've been talking, you know, a lot about, like, from the external developer's point of view, but I'm also curious what you folks actually work on. So, like, Sally, for example, what do you do on the team? Like, what is the life of an accessibility engineer on the inside?
My primary responsibilities involve making sure, like, the framework is working well for its users. So making sure that app developers have the right pathways and the right APIs, making sure that services have the right APIs as well, in order to create a solid, like, end-to-end experience for all users with disabilities.
So these are the APIs underlying the accessibility services. So the stuff, the framework that TalkBack is built on top of, essentially?
Right.
So it's sort of the plumbing in between the Vue hierarchy and the accessibility services, right, that people are writing.
Okay. That's our goal.
What are some of the things that go wrong there? Like, you know, if let's say the toolkit team, Romance, paying attention. Let's say, you know, they introduce some new widget. What are the kinds of things that can go wrong for accessibility if someone just writes their own, let's say, chart component?
I think if someone's writing their own UI components from the ground up, if they don't start thinking about accessibility the first stages, it's very hard to integrate that later on. So, like Kosit said, if someone's building their own libraries, their own components, it takes a lot more work to make sure that is as accessible as it could be, versus using already predefined widgets.
I see. So, is it? So the toolkit team, you know, I think you are building new components, right? And you're building new things like Compose. So are you engaging with, you know, the accessibility team at this point?
Yes, or? We are. Yes, we thought about accessibility tour, surprisingly.
Yeah, actually Compose UI is one of those, like, really successful use cases where they thought about accessibility super early. They engaged us early, and me and Sally and a few other people were in meetings with them for a while. We helped craft their initial API. We helped address those issues that when you first build a UI toolkit, you can make some mistakes that can really ruin accessibility for effectively ever and make it difficult forever. And Compose UI was able to learn from the mistakes that we've made in the past and effectively avoid those disasters. And they're a real big success story in this way.
I see. And so that's not just that the built-in components we're doing from Compose are going to be accessible, but that you've done something to Compose itself so that new composables are more likely to actually be accessible out of the box.
Yeah, exactly. If you think about Compose is a new way of declaring UI. That means your accessibility also has to be declared in a new way. And so I think the Compose UI team rightfully saw this as an opportunity to solve a lot of the pains of accessibility that most app developers regularly face on any other platform, right? And with that, they were able to address those problems very early on by engaging the accessibility team early and just thinking about it early.
And what's interesting about accessibility, I mean, ties back to the discussion we were having earlier with the fact that apps sometimes want to have more information about the UI and the widgets that are present on screen. So in Compose, accessibility is part of a larger, more flexible API called Semantics that is also useful for testing, for instance, or that could be useful for, you know, assistant devices, that kind of stuff. Anything that needs some kind of metadata about the UI will go through this more generic mechanism, and accessibility is a form of that. And in the existing UI toolkit with the view system, part of the issue is that some of the features like accessibility and right-to-left support, like BiDi, have been added after the fact. So it was, you know, to your point, Sally, it was painful both for framework engineers, but also for application developers, because we had to shoehorn it back into the system. And I'm sure you both had to deal with some of the problems caused by that.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting that when, for accessibility especially, right, when these mistakes are made early on, especially in an API surface, everyone has to pay for it in an order of magnitude more, right? It shows that technical debt, especially in an API service, is sometimes irrecoverable and needs to be addressed very early on with some thoughtfulness.
So, Tor, does that answer your question?
The stuff we're talking about now, I think, is... Go ahead.
I was asking Tor if he's happy with the answer.
Yes, it seems like Compose is doing a pretty good job.
But you know,
that sounded very loaded.
Yeah.
So you want to hear about like what happens when you do a bad job, or examples of what happens when there's a bad job, or
actually, that's interesting.
No, I think I was more looking at you know, making this a teachable moment for our listeners. Like, what are the kinds of things that can go wrong? You know, if you're deciding to do a custom view, or if you're deciding whether to build something from scratch or trying to assemble something from existing components. You know, basically a tips and tricks and pitfalls section on what can go wrong as an Android developer.
Yeah, so what can go wrong? I think if you're deciding to build a custom bit of UI, I think my first answer is just don't. I mean, chances are there's probably a widget out there that does that for you already, and they've probably already invested the effort in terms of accessibility. And chances are, no matter who you are, no matter how clever you think you are, you're overlooking a significant portion of the work that's involved. That's not just accessibility. There's many other concerns in building a UI toolkit or new widgets, right?
So do you find that to be true? That if you were to look at components out there, that most of them have considered accessibility and have implemented it? Because I would have guessed that maybe not was the case.
Yeah, I think so. It is true, because part of the problem with accessibility, especially building from the ground up, it's surprisingly easy to make the same mistakes over and over, right? I think with other forms of development, most developers who don't have any accessibility issues are very understand exactly how they're going to interact with widgets and things like that, right? But with accessibility, we don't really have an intuitive understanding of how accessibility users are going to use things and what matters.
So to be clear, I was not doubting that most people will get it wrong. I was doubting whether or not grabbing random libraries from GitHub, if those components also will have considered accessibility, because I suspect that's not the case.
Oh, that's not the case either. What I'm suggesting is try to rely on like Material, Android
X. Oh, the built-in ones. Okay, got it. Okay.
Yeah,
I understand.
Yeah. Yeah, I've had that conversation with app developers, you know, both internally and externally in the past. And I think few people understand the amount of work that goes into a framework widget, because, you know, accessibility, to your point, is obviously a big one and it's difficult. But there's also things like, you know, focusing the different states, BiDi, right to left. And you really have to think about all those edge cases. And, you know, you think your component is done, but you've only done like 20% of the work. And now you have to like do all those things that, you know, you might not need, but someone will need, especially given the wide variety of Android devices and Android users out there.
Actually, I was thinking specifically, too, of some of the internal widgets, which we do hope are handle accessibility correctly, as well as internationalization. Date and time picker is amazingly fragile, or at least it has been over the years, where every time anybody touches it to move the UI just a smidge anywhere, it will break in really horrible and unpredictable ways, in ways that sometimes we don't find out for a while because we didn't do the right check on. I'm not thinking accessibility in particular, but I know internationalization has been a headache for similar reasons, where if you're really not accounting for all of the situations that can come up in this UI, then you will by probability get it wrong, right? And then somebody out in the real world is going to figure that out to their unhappy day.
I think Sally laughed there for a minute because one of our coworkers got inundated with a few day and time bugs recently, which seems like a weird thing that would still need updating, but somehow it still does.
It used to come up every couple of releases. Somebody in the UX team would say, hey, it's time to update date and time picker. And everybody would just take a really big step back because we know.
Yeah, even without that, slight changes in localization, fonts, it's a surprisingly complex widget because it's basically a table of characters and it breaks regularly.
Actually, the font one is interesting. Whenever there is, one of those changes where, we come out with Roboto or Droid Sans or, Google Sans or whatever it is, that looks beautiful. And you know how many internal widgets and apps just broke because of that slight change, because there's just a little bit of pixel modification there. And now,
Yeah, effectively, you save yourself all of the headache. The other thing is with accessibility is it's not something that gets caught in testing right away, right? If you're building your own widget, since most of your users probably aren't using accessibility, you're not going to get that many bugs out of it. And you're only going to find out about a disaster well after the fact, right? And what's up? Oh yeah. And I think that with organizationally doing a significant amount of accessibility work is always a difficult justification. It's always hard to go to your boss and be like, hey, I'm going to be doing a ton of I'm going to make this accessible. And they're like, well, it already works for most of our users. And in their eyes, they think it works for 99.9% of your users, right? And you can tell them otherwise, it's hard to convince them. And it's not necessarily the most technically impressive thing from other people's eyes, even though you're just trying to justify saving a lot of headache. It's a very hard case to make in terms of your own performance, in terms of allocation of resources and things like that. So the fact that it's difficult to find and the fact that it's hard to convince people to dedicate resources to makes it something that is always going to be at risk if you're trying to tackle that work yourself in a very substantial way.
Right. Especially if you didn't build in the capability from the beginning and then it ends up being more work later. I've seen a number tossed around about it's 15% of the people on the planet have some accessibility issue. So once you bring numbers up that are that large, we're talking a billion people, right? Then maybe that's a little more impressive to the people that are making the call and where to allocate those resources. Yeah, Loma.
That reminds me of, when we went through that with Right to Left, there was similar hurdles. And I agree with you, Chet, it's when you bring up numbers, when you say, I don't remember the exact numbers, but something 800 million people in the world, use a language that writes right to left. And suddenly, not for all applications out there, but for the big ones, at least, you realize the magnitude of what you're doing to so many people throughout the world. So I don't know if we publish numbers, but it could be useful, I imagine, for app developers to have a better grasp of how important this is. Because, 15%, it's hard to gauge what it really means. And I assume it's a spectrum as well, right? Some people need accessibility more than others. And like you said, it's different kinds of accessibility. But what I'm curious about, so you mentioned implementing accessibility, but so how do you test? Let's say I implemented accessibility in my custom views. How do I test that? What kind of unit tests do I write? Do I just check the accessibility nodes? What do I do?
Yeah, sorry, before we go on, I just want to bring up one kind of point that I wanted to bring up while we were talking about this organizational thing, right? Part of the reason that I said that you should avoid trying to write your own UI to begin with, or your own custom UI to begin with, instead of using widgets, is that you may be able to make that justification early on to dedicate resources to accessibility, but that justification has to be constantly made. We talked about how fragile things are, especially things like accessibility, right? So you have to ask yourself, is your organization going to be able to do this 3 years from now, 5 years from now, 7 years from now, however long your technology is going to last? And historically, I've seen a lot of companies actually just aren't able to do that. Someone was very well-intentioned, they did it right the first time, but after a while, after they left or after the organization changed, accessibility kind of fell by the wayside, and you have this very quickly deteriorating experience because of that fragility that we were talking about earlier. But I can, so now back into testing. I think for testing, if you're going to do some unit testing, it's kind of straightforward, right? If you're on Android accessibility, there's two key components or three key components of what you're going to be looking for. You're going to make sure that all information is being correctly presented to the accessibility service, and that's verifying that your accessibility node info is correctly populated. So after you, what you do is you'd set up your UI, and you do something like call view compact initialize accessibility node info for view, pass in empty accessibility node info, and verify that its state is correctly populated. That's a pretty easy unit test, right? The other one is you want to make sure that events are sent at the correct time, right? Events effectively indicate changes to the accessibility node info state. So what you'd do is you'd set up a UI, within that UI, you'd override send accessibility event, and you trigger a change to that UI to see if the correct accessibility event is being passed into send accessibility event at the correct time, right? And that's another kind of straightforward way to cover the next third of accessibility. And the final bit is making sure that accessibility services can perform actions on your UI. And that's quite simply calling perform action on whatever your component is to make sure that the correct things happen to your UI, and then checking the state of the view or your view hierarchy after the fact. I think as far as most granular unit tests, those three things are going to cover your accessibility quite substantially. Now, if you're just doing stuff like labeling your images or adding a state description, you probably don't need that level of unit testing. But if you're doing anything more complicated than that, that level of unit testing is worthwhile.
Isn't there some sort of integration with Espresso where you get more detailed information about mistakes you're making in terms of accessibility?
Yeah, that's very similar to the information that you're going to get out of your accessibility scanner and your integration report. I forgot what the integration report is called, but Robo Electric and Espresso both have integrations where it will give you output in terms of what's wrong, similar to accessibility scanner.
Okay. And that can be automated, so you can add that to your CI and find out that somebody submitted code they shouldn't have.
Yeah, exactly. But if you're making complicated user experiences, then you should definitely add in those accessibility unit tests.
Yeah.
And would that be a way that I could make sure that this is drivable through the accessibility framework? Because if I write my instrumentation test to actually drive it through the accessibility objects instead of through the UI, is that a realistic approach?
Yeah, that's definitely a realistic approach to do that. The only issue, the only thing to consider is, aside from finding bugs that like me and Sally have introduced into code, there's not really much of a purpose of app developers trying to test the accessibility framework themselves.
Meant that if, let's say, I'm supposed to open up an activity, click on three buttons, and then do something else, right? If I basically search the view hierarchy for the buttons and click them, that'll work. But if I instead use accessibility framework and then I discover that, hey, there was a UI component there that is not exposed, you know, like it wouldn't necessarily, it's not that I'm testing your accessibility framework, it's that I'm testing that my UI actually exposes everything that's needed to accomplish the task of the UI test through accessibility nodes.
Yeah, I think you can use some of the UI automation tools, but this is definitely out of my zone of expertise. So I don't want to talk too much about that. I don't want to mislead people.
Okay.
That's what this podcast is all about. Are you kidding me?
No, that's our job, Chad. The guests are not supposed to mislead people. Oh. We do that.
All right.
I just want to also mention, we talked earlier about how, you know, there's not everyone may necessarily need all the accessibility information, but they might like it anyway. I remember when my kids were younger, I started watching TV with subtitles because I wanted the audio off I didn't want the kids to be staring at the screen. But I could then glance at it and know what was happening, you know. And I still, to this day, actually will often have subtitles on even with the audio, because I find it sometimes easier than trying to really parse everything that's being said.
Well,
so I think there's potentially a larger market for some of the accessibility technology than just people who strictly need it.
There is. And one of the things I loved in the world of video games over the past few years is that accessibility is now taken seriously by a lot of game developers. And it's fantastic for a few reasons, but one of them is subtitles, because I assume game developers like have giant TVs that sit on their desk and they sit like 2 inches from the TV. So they think their font size is big enough, but it's not when you're in your living room And with accessibility options, now you can increase the font size and I can finally read some of the subtitles. And, you know, and I don't need accessibility normally, but this, like, you know, when you're tired at the end of the day, like, you just make it's improvement quality of life. So it's nice to have those features like show up everywhere.
Yeah, I think this sort of stuff is a good justification to do accessibility, right? That you're going to help more than just those users that you think are strictly accessible. But at least when we're doing our accessibility development, and I like to imagine as most people, when they're doing accessibility development, they should really focus on users who strictly need accessibility, right? People who fundamentally wouldn't be able to use your application or benefit from your UI unless that UI is accessible in a way that they need it, right? The reason is if you don't do that, then you kind of... those some of the things that very subtly annoy those users and can completely ruin an experience, sometimes are very tiny issues, are going to be overlooked very quickly, right? And the other thing is there's just a lot of power that's earned by making your UI accessible in ways. If you think about it, like maps, for example, right? We have all this transit, navigation, and things like that. This is stuff that really... this sort of capability of being able to explore an area on your own wasn't available to many people who needed accessibility before an accessible Google Maps came out. And so that's why, in my opinion, it's more important to focus on users who really need accessibility in this way, as opposed to people who are going to think about accessibility in a very transitional way.
Right. And so are there applications, I assume, like, so you mentioned maps, I assume they had to do something very custom, right? To make maps accessible?
Oh, no, not really. I mean, the transit stuff effectively is just a list of directions given at a particular time, right?
Oh, right. And I was thinking of the map itself.
That's a very difficult thing, right? I'm not sure anyone in the world really has solved that yet. So if any of you guys have ideas, make an accessible map.
not off the top of my head, no.
Actually, that's one of the interesting things, I think, in this general area is it's not like there is one or even two or even three accessibility issues that, you know, you need to address. Like there is this spectrum. There are many different kinds of accessibility, you know, low sight, motor skills, what, you know, color blindness, whatever, and then a spectrum of those as well. And so what your job on the accessibility team is to figure out, okay, well, what are the largest ones? So let's at least start there. Okay, well, there are a lot of people with vision problems, and then how do we address, you know, the most egregious of those, and then just sort of go from there. But it's like you could never actually solve all the problems because there are so many different variations, right?
Well, kind of. Our job on the accessibility frameworks team is to make sure that people can address all the variants that they want. In theory, given what we're given, you can address a massive number of variants, right? Because the accessibility frameworks are giving a service a complete representation of the UI with a few small exceptions in terms of timing and things like that, right? Then after that, it just becomes a matter of like, okay, can we get enough people to work on each of these different kinds of disabilities over time, right? So we've got people for talkback, switch access, and things like that, and just third-party developers working on many other different kinds of disabilities, every variation that you can imagine, right? And so I think as an app developer, you don't have to be concerned with all those variations. You just have to be concerned about expressing it to the accessibility framework. It's not that daunting of a challenge. You can leave the variations to experts. And if you are one of those experts, you can make an accessibility service yourself.
I guess that's it. We give the people the tools that they need to write the applications that do the thing. So our job is to figure out what's, you know, how flexible can we make the tools so that they could build whatever they want. I mean, it's a little hard to anticipate all their needs, but at least if you are giving access to as much as we can within the platform, then that is the job.
I mean, the vision here is that like if application developers make their UIs accessible, then a service developer out there who might be working with a few individuals who have a very particular unique kind of disability and has a little bit of engineering know-how can make a service that can allow these individuals to use their devices, right? And that's kind of the purpose right there.
Yep. All right. So we talked about accessibility in general and all the tools and capabilities and advice. Are there specific features or capabilities that we've been building in recently? So we now have Android 11 Developer Preview 2 is out. were the things that you did specifically in this release or the last release that you want developers to know about or play with?
Yeah. So, so to understand that, let's just say that you're doing all the right things and you're using standard widgets, right? So there's a few very key core things that you should make sure are expressive to the user. The main thing is content descriptions, right? Most of your accessibility issues are going to be just content descriptions, adding that in there, right? The other thing that we discovered that we needed to add in is new API that we just added is state description, right? The idea is content description is a description of whatever content is on screen. But if you have values of your widget that are changing over time, like that exist in a slider or a timer or stuff like that, right? You can add in a state description, and that's going to present that information to the user in a very concise way and update correctly as the state changes. So that's kind of the new really big API that we feel like really rounds out all of the our accessibility API properly.
Okay, and I assume this is platform and hard to embed into Android X in a release.
Oh, it's an Android X.
It is. Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. Fantastic. So, what you can do, just like a content description, you go view compat dot set state description. You pass in the view, and you pass in a car sequence for whatever the state description is.
Okay. Nice. Okay, so. Would you say a lot of your work is actually done now in the unbundled libraries or platform, or is it a mix?
It's a mix. I mean, most of the work that we end up doing in platform is, I guess, effectively fixing bugs and supporting newer Android platform features, right? Like the very substantial hardware level features, right? And dramatic changes in the system UI. But in the bundled libraries, we're kind of supporting all of the new widgets, the new libraries, and trying to find ways to address long-standing accessibility issues that we can fix back to effectively API 19, which is the farthest back we can fix accessibility issues in Android X.
What? Why is that? I'm curious. Why 19 in particular?
Yeah, so accessibility node info is the core interface here, right? And accessibility node info has an extras bundle, which was added in API 19. So we can throw in any arbitrary key or value in there, wrap it with accessibility node info compat and any accessibility node info compat API that work all the way back to API 19.
Okay.
I'm not sure how useful that is to app developers, but API 19 is where, if you use view compat and accessibility node info compat, your stuff will work back to API 19 in general.
All right. Hopefully that's good enough for the bulk of the developers.
What is the minus decay version of Android X at this point, Roman? Do you know?
19 is usually what's targeted.
Okay.
It depends on the libraries, but and it depends. Compose, for instance, currently is targeting 21.
Yep. All right. So, what did we forget to ask? Anything on your mind? You're like, how come they didn't?
I think maybe I've touched upon this a little bit, but I think one of the key challenges of accessibility is an organizational one. Like many other technical issues, organizational problems manifest in engineering, right? And they manifest in your code. And because of the nature of how cross-cutting accessibility is, that all of your UI needs to be accessible. Or sometimes the information that accessibility comes from a different data source. It may come from the fact that a content description has to be uploaded by a content creator. You normally have to get large parts of the organization in sync to make even the most simple UIs accessible, right? And this becomes a challenge because although the code turns out to be very simple, the actually getting people in line is actually quite complicated. So one has to be quite thoughtful in terms of how am I going to get my organization on board with this? And it is a little bit difficult, but I think it is something that's genuinely rewarding. One thing that I've found kind of works is giving a central accessibility team to effectively give them free rein to make accessibility changes anywhere in the system, gated by is accessibility on, so their crashes don't happen unless accessibility is on. So that helps out a lot, right? The other is just convincing the right people. And I think that's kind of something that if you're trying to tackle accessibility in your organization, you really have to think about that upfront. How are you going to approach this in an organizational way?
Well, that does it for me. Anything else? Are we good? All right. Thanks.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Thank you.